Sabrosura pa ti que que.
Hello, everyone. This is Pam, de Café con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Oh my gosh, welcome to episode 300 of Café con Pam. I'm so excited because this is a special episode, not only because it is episode 300, but because it is one of the only we've done with five people, four guests and me, and they're my favorite podcasters, some of my favorite people, and I am so delighted. This was so fun. This was a delight to record. We ran out of time. Thank you for those of you who were here live. Well, I'll give you the quick intros of these incredible humans because they're all so well accomplished and so amazing. We'll start with Linda Garcia. Linda Garcia is the CEO of The Chosen 100 and founder of In Luz We Trust. Emmanuel Ortega, also known as Babelito, is the Marilyn Thomas Scholar and Assistant Professor in Art of the Spanish Americas at the University of Illinois at Chicago and a Scholar in Residence at the Newberry Library for 2022-2023. Justin Favela, or Fabi Fav, is a multidisciplinary artist known for large-scale installations and sculptures that manifest his interactions with American pop culture and the Latinx experience. And last but not least, Luis Octavio, who is a multi-passionate entrepreneur now known for his magical creations through his TikTok channel, DIY. Y bueno, listeners, you may have heard these humans in their own podcasts, and the reason why I chose them to come to episode 300 is because they were the first people when I started Café con Pam to say yes to me. There were so many other podcasts that I reached out to, and they closed the doors in the beginning because there were very few of us. And back in 2016, maybe we were learning as a community to be more welcoming to one another. It was still, I got to face still a lot of, back then, a lot of individualism. If I made it to this point, I'm going to make it hard for you because it was hard for me type thing. And these four people, they were super open and welcoming and they're awesome. And we started a thing together. And then we decided that it was time for us to take on our own interests. And we stayed friends. And here we are. So this episode is like a catch-up time, is a reunion that was way too fast. We could have kept talking for hours. Literally each one, I could have asked them lots of questions and caught up. And bueno, I'm not going to delay it anymore. I know you're eager to listen to our conversation. Y sin más, here is episode 300. Oh my gosh, we are live.
Hey!
Hey!
Wow.
It's a reunion.
It's a reunion.
Episodio 300 de Café con Pam. Can you believe it? Thank you for being my special guests. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
And I mean, this is going to be like a catch-up conversation. No va a ser como un episodio. Who wants to kick us off with your updates? Remember when we started, when we did Podcasterio? I was talking to someone earlier today and I'm like, yeah, we did Podcasterio together and then...
And then what happened? We were so happy. I remember we did a ritual and I remember crying and I remember being so happy. What
happened?
It
was a whole thing.
My bad.
Los inicio and then what happened? So what happened actually? We all had podcasts, no? And then we were like, okay, we need something that will unite all of us because we wanted to bring us together. But I don't know. Was the world not ready for it? What do you all think?
I do feel like it was early in the game.
I agree.
We're visionaries.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we had the plans and the dreams.
We did. We had the plans and the dreams, and I think we had the platforms y todo. Pero as I like to say, se nos atravesó un burro en el camino, and life happens, right? Life happens. Luce is now in another country, and everybody's in another country now. We're all like...
another planet. I know. So when was podcast video? 2018?
Hijo de su madre. That was a long time ago. El 17.
17? Yeah. Wow.
I think so. Yeah, I think it was a really long time ago.
See, it was like early. Even though it was early, we still brought how many podcasts? Like 30, no?
Yeah.
Did we?
Yes.
Was it 30?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
No, no eran tantos. Eran como unos...
No, eran 30. I just remember the Google Doc.
Well, ¿tú qué has hecho? ¿Qué han hecho? Yo, mira, sigo en mi cama. Yo estilo Frida Kahlo. I know, Babelito, you don't like Frida Kahlo. And I just made a reference.
Oye, Luis, pero a ti te pasó algo, ¿no? Alguien me dijo, because I'm not on social media, but like somebody was telling me that something happened to you. I remember I reached out to you. ¿Qué show?
Sí, well, I mean, I had my gallbladder removed during the pandemic. And I was in Mexico when, like, literally my bladder exploded. And I obviously thought it was, like, COVID because everything te dolía una uña and you thought it was COVID, right? So, estaba en Mexico. I was going to be out there for a month. And literally 3 days into my trip, me dio fiebre, me dio de todo. And I was like, wait, no chingas mames, COVID. So, el único día que no tuve fiebre, I was like, I'm flying back. Because if I do have COVID, ¿qué chingados hago yo acá, right? And then I got back. Thought it was COVID, quarantined, and hice todo ese desmadre, and it turned out it wasn't COVID. It was my gallbladder. And so what was going to be a quick outpatient surgery ended up being like a 2 month ordeal, 5 surgeries. It was bad. Like literally, me acuerdo que ese año mi papá during our Thanksgiving dinner was like, I've never seen my dad cry. And he cried and he was like, I really thought Luis was going to die because perdió muchísimo peso. Like I was so weak.
Se complicó, ¿no?
Se complicó todo. But I think I learned so much from that experience. And going to therapy also helped because it gave me a moment to kind of just sit back and be like, wey, cálmate, relájate un chingo, because you're like up and up and up and going, y wey, te tienes que relajar.
Pues qué bueno que ya estás bien, te ves súper bien.
Ay, gracias, gracias.
¿Y cómo empezaste tu DIY?
Pues, obviamente, TikTok, when it started, you all know that the government was saying that they were going to shut it down because they were taking our information, and as if the U.S. government isn't already, right?
Yes.
Hi.
Yo es lo único que sé. Pero I wanted to start researching a little bit more because I thought this thing is not going anywhere. Y no sabía qué poner. And so I was like, qué pongo? Because at the time, people were doing dances and choreographs y la chingada. And I was like, yo lo único que sé hacer es bailar cumbia. And that doesn't seem to go with what like the TikTokers are doing, at least not at the moment.
Y baila re bien el cabrón. Una vez bailamos en el DF. Mm-hmm. Hijo de su madre.
Ay, gracias, gracias.
He spun me round, baby.
And so I posted a video of me doing a tablescape, and that video literally got like, I want to say 1,000 views. And that was like my first video. And so I was like, damn, there's something here. And I started doing more DIYs, which is something that I've been doing all my life, except I never posted it or put it in the forefront because I wasn't out of the closet before. And so I started posting more and more and people started liking it. And at the beginning, I was doing hashtag DIY a la Mexicana. But then I was like, ay, eso me recuerda a Thalia. And that reminds me of fucking huevos a la Mexicana. Like, I was like, I'm not loving it. And then one day I did a DIY and I was like, wey, esto se ve increíble. And then it was like, güey, DIY, claro, DIY, it sounds like DIY, and yes, let's do it. And so that's how that was born. And I literally acabo de cumplir un año con la plataforma on February 17th, and 45,000 followers later.
Damn.
One sponsorship, because that one sponsorship put respect on my check, como dice la comadre Beyonce, and I've been able to say no to several big brands where they're like, they just want to pay una miseria, and I'm like, güey, no chingas mames, no, you know, so... That's what I've been up to. Haciendo manualidades, sin albur.
Did any of you see cositas?
Oh,
es que lo pasaban en México, is it?
It's like Mr. Rogers, would you be my neighbor? Pinche Reading Rainbow, pero es una señora que se pone un bane toda pinche de la Inquisición. And fucking, she does manualidades with kids. And I guess she was super popular in the 80s. 90s, and even up to today, because guess what? I just saw the Piñata Wars on Netflix, which is a stupid-ass show, but I saw the whole thing, And she comes out at the end. And I was like, fucking Pam. But yeah, I'm not cositas. Yo soy cosota.
Cosota.
They wouldn't pay me to go on that show, so I didn't do it.
Dude, like, I saw that.
I'm like, wait, I'm going to go there and be on TV for free. You're not going to pay me to do it. They're like, if you win, I'm like, yeah, I'm already exactly. winning. It's okay.
Leave me. Leave me. Yeah. Yes.
I'm tired of working for free, bitch. What the hell?
Ozeke, everyone who went, they just did it for exposure.
Exposure and the chance to win what? Like, it was 100,000 pesos or medio millón de pesos or something pesos. Yeah. So what have you all been up to? Luz, cuenta.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I don't even know. I truly do not even know what is going on.
Pandemic happened.
Yeah, the last thing I truly, truly remember is I've had two channeling sessions with Dari Luna. I don't know if you all know Dari Luna, but so she did a channeling session for me in 2018 and then she did another one in 2019. And in both sessions, she's like, your guides want you to learn about finance. And I was like, this bitch is not talking to me. Like, I don't know who she's talking to, but she is not talking to me. And then when she read me again, she's like, your guides want to know why you're still not going into finance. And I was like, wait, that was really for me? Like, for me, like, finance, like, what do you mean? Like, abundance? Like, woo, let's bring in abundance. She's like, no, like, numbers, finance. I still like put it on the back burner and was kind of perplexed. And then I moved to Texas and the pandemic started. Well, actually, it hadn't started yet. It was in January. And I was like, this is going to come to the United States. People were like nonchalant.
Oh my God, same.
Yeah, I was like, can you not see? Like, if we just open our eyes and see, there's no way they can restrict. There's no containing, right? And even though I was scared and all those things, I was like, this is a massive opportunity because as soon as this comes, the stock market is going to tank. And I had already been investing in the stock market since the beginning of 2013 and learning about the stock market since 2012. And I had taken like a total of like $8,000 and that grew to, at the moment back then, to $300,000. And so there was this part of me that like realized how much I had been gatekeeping. And part of not telling anyone is because you don't talk about money, number one. Number two is I didn't really know. I mean, I knew what I was doing and I was learning to do it, but to try and share that with other people is a massive responsibility because you have to do your own diligence. But I felt like there's no resources because I didn't have resources. So I was like reading all these old white men books and literally putting down the book, Googling every other word in the sentence. It took me years to like fully understand. But once I started to have more conversations, I'm like, I get this more than I give myself credit for. And so I was just like shouting from the roof. Like first I called my sister, I called all my close relatives and was like, hey, this was in like February 5th, okay? And I was like, the stock market is going to drop. You need to open up a brokerage account and you need to set money aside and get ready for this drop and you need to invest. And my family was like, the fuck? But I think that my family was like, are you okay? Do you need to go to the doctor? And I'm like, no, the pandemic is coming. Listen, we have an opportunity. I sounded like a mad woman. No one would listen to me. So I went on my stories rambling and everyone was asking for resources. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a 1-hour workshop. And in creating the 1-hour workshop, I realized how much information this is. And I ended up creating a 10-hour crash course, building everything together. And I was like, okay, I'm going to provide this as a resource. I honestly thought it was going to be a crash course that I would teach one time, genuinely. And I go to sell it and I wake up in the morning and it's $20,000 that I've incurred off of sales. And I was like, holy shit. There's something here. Like it clicked. Like this isn't just right now. This is going to turn into something else. Like this is an actual resource for community. And I just kept going and kept going. I was doing two workshops a month, and I was capping the workshop so that I could be able to answer questions. I was capping it at 100 people. We were selling out 3 months in advance. I started in June, and at the end of the year, I had a literary agent. The literary agent reached out and said, "We've taken your course twice. Like, we've been watching you, and we believe that you have a book. Have you ever thought of writing a book?" Just like that. And I was like, of course I've thought of writing a book, but not on the fucking stock market. Not on the fucking stock market. And they're like, well, that's exactly why we think you would be perfect, because all we hear from is people that are in that space. And so they're like, you're decentralizing this system. You're making it accessible. Like, I would compare the stock market to the swap meet and break it down in swap meet terms. I would compare it to that so that they could process it easier. So everything was very simple terms. And a lot of my students ended up having so much success, because what I knew was that the stock market was going to crash, which it did. But what I didn't know was that it was going to, within days of crashing, it was going to hit a bull run, which means it's just going to, more money was going to come, be flooded into it. So a lot of our students made so much money, and in that energy, like, it just started snowballing. Yeah, so here we are.
Congrats.
That's amazing.
And what happened to the podcast? Because people still want it. People still listen to it.
People still listen to it. Like, I still get notifications and DMs on it. You know, I feel like it was poetic. My last episode was 101. And I feel like it's the 101 of spirituality, and that's there, and it's going to be there to rest. We are in current negotiations for potentially something in the future. So,
dun, dun, dun.
Nice.
That's so exciting. And you're going to come back to talk specifically about the book, like, in a few weeks, actually.
Yes, I will be back on Café con Fam to talk all about the book. Releasing April 11th. It's in pre-sale right now. You can get it at Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, Amazon. We got to show up, y'all. Let's get it.
You deserve. Congratulations. This is amazing. That makes me so happy.
Thank you, Babelito. Thank you.
Yes. We celebrate with you for sure. How exciting. Babelito, tell us about you.
So, we ended the podcast almost 2 years ago. We had a lot of conversations, but I think Fabi and I got to a place where, thankfully, our careers took off during the pandemic. To me, it was like an opposite chain reaction. We got stuck, and my creative juices started going. It was interesting because I have una tía que es bruja, and I was in a bad place, you know, between podcasterio and the pandemic. And finally, I reached out to her. She did the Reiki, todo el pedo, and she gave me two boxes of incense. She goes, burn one stick one day and another stick another day. The night before I had a presentation, the last stick burned out. The following morning, here in the conference in Chicago, my career took off that morning. I had a presentation. I had a line of scholars wanted to talk to me. I had a line of my bibliography just saying congratulations. I had a publisher who wanted to talk to me. I got all these gigs. I ended up speaking in Yale. I'm going to London to speak, like, everything off of that morning. I don't know what happened. Something clicked. So we go into the pandemic, and I revised all my classes. I mean, we had a Latinos Who Lunch episode. I was very, very, very lucky to be with my husband's family, and they just allowed me the space to create. We moved to the desert after the summer, and I put together an article, and that article also took off, and it's been nonstop. It's been nonstop since then. What you say, art history famous. I mean, not that famous, at least in my field, which is five people. But But it just, it took a long, long time. And that opened a lot of doors, including the opportunity to curate a show that I always dreamed about. That show, it's Contemporary Ex Votos, Devotion Beyond Medium, which opened in the New Mexico State University. Favi was very kind to also be part of the exhibition. It's traveling, is going to Vegas in August, is going to Chicago, is going to San Antonio. We have a catalog. I basically had no life all last year. It was a lot of work. But we finally moved back after 2 years of the pandemic. We lived in Joshua Tree, in Santa Fe, in Albuquerque. And we have our little place here in Chicago. And it's been great going back. I think I was losing the value of teaching. I remember forgetting that I had a class every week. I will be like, oh, yeah, let's do that on Monday. And my husband will be like, you teach on Monday. I was like, oh, fuck. Okay. So getting back to the classroom was everything. It's almost like I start teaching a new generation. These Gen Z kids, I'm obsessed with them. I love them. They're all woke. The conversations in the classroom are so different than before the pandemic. There's a lot of things that have changed. Everybody has anxiety. So it's a little complicated. But it's just been beautiful being back in the classroom. I also got the opportunity to teach at a research library. It's like a very fancy research library, the Newberry. I'm teaching with documents. So like I give a class on 1500s and then the next day we see all the documents from the 1500s. So it's just a completely different life, a completely different career. Again, I have a book contract, so I'm trying to get some space to work on my book just because it requires a lot of research and some traveling. But yeah, like things are going good and hopefully this exhibition will open the doors to do more shows. We had a great time. Fabi was there in the opening. We had almost 500 people in the opening. It was my 40th birthday. Like it was so, 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 so beautiful. So a lot of things started to come into place. Again, después de que se quemó el pinche incencio, like I love my aunt. Se la mantiene peleándose con mi mamá. Like it's just like a whole ass thing. But as I said before, like, I don't disbelieve, like, I don't dismiss this. And this is something that I learned with Latinos Who Launch. I was very dismissive of alternative ways of understanding the world. And I don't do that anymore. And I allow myself the space to heal. And things started working out, you know, so hopefully it continues like that. This month, I'm going to lecture at the Royal Academy in London. I'm going to Puerto Rico, like, What is happening? But it's good. It's good. And again, I do think that things happen for a reason, but I have a lot to thank to Justin and to the podcast because that started the ball rolling in understanding our worth and understanding that we can do it, you know? And it was thanks to the podcast and honestly, all of you, like you all came back and reached out to us and always championed us. And that's something that I will never forget.
Pues pásanos el número de tu tía, por favor.
Ahí te lo da.
I want to just double back on that sentiment, like that Babelito said. Like, I was looking at the pictures from Podcasterio, and they made me so emotional because, like, what a wild idea to try to get all of these Latinx podcasters together, you know? And we did it, you know, out of just, like, love and necessity. And I think it was just that timing was, it was essential for, I think, all the 20, 30 podcasts that were there to just see that we could do it. And then there was a community online. We were just kind of figuring it out, paving the way, making all the mistakes for these young Gen Zers that Babelito loves so much. You know, like now it's just like so easy, you know, for people to podcast. And I listen to so many podcasts now. You know, when me and Babelito started, I was like, I just want to hear two, you know, maricones talking, and I can't find it anywhere. You know, like we can be those people. And of course, through that, we found the other people that were trying to do the same thing in their own lanes or in our lane or whatever. And there was plenty of room, and there still is plenty of room, you know, which I think is important to just say. But yeah, I'll give you an update on my life, I guess, since the podcast. So Latinos Who Lunch ended. It was like during the pandemic, and it was like the perfect time to fall into a deep depression. And that's exactly what I did. And so, I mean, I have my cycles. You know, I talked about it on the podcast a lot. Babelito and I talked about mental health so much on the show. And we've grown so much. But it was the first time that I was able to sit with it and feel it Because I think we were always like, go, go, go. We were podcasting. I was doing art shows. Like, I couldn't go install work at places. I couldn't travel anymore. My grandma got stuck in Durango in Mexico. And so then I was taking care of her house. So I had like my own place. I was isolated. And it's when I realized like, oh my God, I've just been going, going, going and not processing anything for the past 5 years. And it hit me, you know? And I just started to think about my art and my self-worth in a very different way, because I could actually sit there and think about it and then also feel it. I don't know about y'all, but like my body kind of went into shock from like not moving all the time, not going, 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 you know? And I realized like how much physical pain I was in from doing my art installations. And so that made me start thinking about, as Latinx people, as Latina people, you know, like, am I killing myself because that's what I've been taught all my life? Like, you got to work hard, puro jale, right? If you're not breaking your back, are you working? You know, if you're not crucifying yourself, are you even worth it? You know, are you even doing anything, right? So then it changed my art practice, I think. I started to charge more for my work. I started to make work in a more healthy way. And that all came like in October of that. I think it was October 2021 or something. I got this huge fellowship from the Joan Mitchell Foundation. Joan Mitchell, if you don't know, is one of these white ladies that makes splatter paintings that everybody loves, okay? And so, and I love them now too because she's my mother. Thank you so much, Joan Mitchell. You are everything. Whatever cult she's in, I'm part of it, okay?
Amen.
And so I got this huge fellowship, which meant a lot of money for me to actually have a studio space here in Las Vegas. Like, I'm in a room right now full of, it's just shelves and shelves of paper, right? A whole room. And like, it's like something that I've always wanted. And now I've been able to afford it and have a healthier practice. So I have my studio in Las Vegas. And then from that, I think just opportunities are just like rolling in. I'm booked through basically 2025 right now, which is amazing for an artist, independent artist, to say that, you know?
Yeah.
I just feel really fortunate to kind of have gone through all of that in probably the safest way, because knowing myself, and I know you guys have seen my behavior when I'm in self-destruction mode or whatever mode, it's like, okay, I did it at my house, you know, just like on edibles, you know, that was probably the safest way to do it. But now I got a lot going on now. I got like a show almost every month this year and next year. I have a book coming out. Luis, come on, you got to get your book. Like, yeah. We all have to have books. I have a book coming out. My dear friends in Austin, Texas have this really great organization called Rizo Rizo. They're like a risograph printing lab, and then Group Project, which is just like this creative group that got together to put a book together of my career so far. Because I think after I got this fellowship, people stopped calling me an emerging artist. And now I'm technically a mid-career artist, which is crazy to say out loud. Because just 2 weeks ago, they were still calling me emerging, you know, an article. So I'm like, bitch, I've been here. I don't know what.
I've been emerging.
God, this is a long-term pregnancy, girl.
I've emerged.
So I think this book is kind of a milestone. It's like the first 10 years of my career, 2011 to 2021, basically all the artwork that I did and all the projects that I did in there. So Latinos Who Lunch and our, you know, support Latinx, support Brown podcast crew is like, we talk about it a lot in the book. So that'll be coming out in March. If y'all want to pre-order,
yes,
go to my Instagram, get on that link tree, honey. Okay.
I have pre-ordered it, actually.
Oh, yay. So you should be getting a limited edition print soon. And then the book comes next month, which is so exciting. I'm also the director of an artist residency in Arkansas right now. So I've split my time between
art. That's why you're always in Arkansas.
Yeah. Not, yes. I better be careful what I say because I get run over by a Walmart truck when I get out of my studio. God damn. No, it's fine. So I'm doing this residency in Arkansas. I'm helping start this residency this year. It's actually been really great to be away from Las Vegas because, you know, they say like you don't really know what you have until it's gone, right? And so I'm like, yeah, no problem. I'll do this thing in Arkansas. And then I went and I'm not as productive over there. I don't feel like I'm as creative, you know, because I have my family, my people here. Not that I don't like what I'm doing in Arkansas, but I'm more working over there, like as a director of a residency and not as, you know, Justin Favela or Favi, the artist. So it's been a great learning experience. And shout out to if anybody's listening from Arkansas, because the Latinos there are tight. You know, they are awesome. There's a lot of Salvis, a lot of Hondureños, Guatemaltecos, Mexicanos. You know, somebody needs to run all those chicken farms, right? So our people are down there making some amazing food. I got to say, I'm so blessed. My neighborhood, oh my God. And I never expected that from Arkansas. So that also shows me, and what Latinos Who Lunch showed us too, like podcasting, like we're everywhere, right? And so it's been really eye-opening and also just like a great experience to connect to a different, you know, Latino community in another way. Yeah. But yeah, that's what I'm up to.
I just ordered my book.
Hey.
So does this mean that I get a limited edition as well, or am I late?
No, but I have artist proofs and I'll personally send you one.
Oh, okay.
Nice. The pre-order is so important, everyone. So I need to pre-order Linda's.
Very important. Pre-order.
Pre-order Linda's book. Yes, because of the pre-order situation, we were able to pay for the printing and didn't have to pay out of pocket because this is like a independent book, you know, so which means that I get most of the money as well, which is like unheard of with publishing deals, you know. So yeah, pre-ordering really saved us because we were all going to have to pay a lot to pay it.
Pam, do you have a book coming out soon too?
Not yet, but maybe. Maybe I have a book in me.
Pam and I don't have a book coming out, but we do have a coloring book.
Hey! Well, there you go.
We do have a coloring book.
You need a how-to DIY book.
Yes.
I know.
Documenting what you've already done. Just hire someone to write it up.
You can have a collection of all your DIY stuff.
Yes. Okay, like a ghostwriter. Sí, porque, güey, yo no tengo paciencia. I don't know. Like, I generally love to do these projects and me sale la paciencia, but outside of that, I have zero patience.
Paulette says, who needs Martha Stewart when you've got DIY?
A huevo.
Pero sí, tú puedes hacer un como, like a recipe book, pero para DIYs, ¿no?
And just beautiful photography on each of your pieces and get the person to look at your TikTok, look at your videos and write down the steps. Yeah.
Y es que sabes qué pasa? I think this is one of the things that I've noticed from the DIYs, and I think this is why it resonates with people, is that if there are instructions to be followed, a mí me da mucha hueva and I don't follow the instructions. So every so often I get people saying, did you prime? Did you sand? No way, I didn't. Lo hice como mi pinche mente me dio a entender y ahí se va. Por eso es DIY. O te sale bien o te sale mal, pero vas a decir güey al final. So, yeah.
That sounds like the perfect introduction to the book. Like that needs to be typed up and that's the intro to the book.
Okay, Nancy, ahí te encargo, ¿va? Porfa. ¿Y tú, Pam? ¿Qué onda? Cuéntanos, tú también.
Yo, I had an identity crisis. I went through it, and now we're back. So what happened to me is that I like a lot of things. And so for a long time, I was kind of like, people wanted to box me into like, you're this and you're this. And I'm like, but I'm a lot of things. And so I had to like really go inward, hablando de mental health, and really give myself permission to be all the things. And one thing that happened is that took me into this journey of exploration. I was in a panel somewhere, no ni me acuerdo, and they introduced me and la persona que me introdujo was like, she knew me. She introduced everyone like with their bios and whatever. And then when she got to me, she was like, aquí viene Pam, she does a lot of things. And I was like, oh, hell no.
Yes.
Yo no voy a ser la todóloga. Like, what the hell?
Estúpida tu pelo.
Sí. And so, o sea, ¿qué le pasa? So I realized that I wasn't really being purposeful on like being known for something because I was just exploring a lot of things. Entonces, I really asked myself, what do I want to be known for? Y like, al último, I ended up going to the beginning of how I started, which is I'm a recovering procrastinator and my thing is productivity. really my whole work is around how do you be more productive in a mindful way with a regulated nervous system. And like, ahí meto todos mis tools, pero like the foundation is productivity. And so I've been working on that. I'm like, como el dicho, the cobbler's kids have no shoes or whatever. You know, like as a former brand strategist, like I didn't have a good messaging. So I had to really go back and explore. And like now I'm grateful that that person introduced me as like, she does all the things, because that led me into this journey of like, what do I really do?
Dang.
You know, and the only thing that's been super consistent has been, you know, 300 episodes.
Pero Pam, that's super important. My very first days of classes, we always talk about dynamic language. We don't talk about race. We talk about racialization. We don't talk about gender. We talk about gendering. We don't talk about identity. We talk about identification. So when you put things in a dynamic language and think about it as a process, you allow yourself to change, because we're not boxes, you know? And that's how the government wants to sort of make sense of us for control. So if you just like, I'm Latino and I'm gay and that's it, and I'm a podcaster, that's it. But understanding yourself as a process, you realize that you have a whole ass past, you have this changing present and a bright future, you know? So this is really, really important. I love that.
Totally. And that's something that I've always, porque yo llegué a este país and that's when I got boxed, you know? And so that's always something that I've been like exploring that annoys me so much, because it's like, all of a sudden you're a Latina, you know? And I'm like, pero I'm Pam first, you know? And so that's something that it's always been part of my journey of this, like, being in a box. And so finally I was like, fuck this. I'm not in a box. I'm outside of the box.
I have a question for you all. So I think that many of the things that we are doing now came from not being somebody that we could look up to, right? Not, for example, Luz, not having those tools in a way that resonated with you. Babelito, the same way. Fabi, igual. Pam. One of the things that I continue to struggle with, even though we've broken some barriers, right, and we continue to make space, and if there's not a seat at that table, we create our own table. But Pam can attest to this. One of the things that I struggle with the most is your worth, right? And this is something that I've been seeing through social media, where these agencies and these brands are approaching you and they want to give you pennies for your content and for you creating content. But in your situations individually, how do you break that? Because I feel like for me, it's always been a constant struggle. And I think about, I want to make it affordable so that people can buy it, right? But then at the same time, now that I'm doing these DIYs, I'm like, wait, no mames, El Cascariachi took me fucking 10, 15 hours to create, not including going and looking for the, you know, the materials. I'm not going to sell it for $30, $40, si sabes? So how do you remind yourself of like, this is what I'm worth, and not feel guilty?
Can I talk about that really quick? I think because I struggle with that strongly to this day. And I feel like that's going to be an internal battle that we're going to have, just given like being children of immigrants or immigrants where we were brought here to work, right? Like we were saying earlier, we came here to make money, but unfortunately our interpretation of making money is working really hard and getting paid almost nothing. And I understand, and I think all of us empathize with wanting to make what you're creating accessible. So one of the ways that I like found not necessarily balance, but like peace in my space is that I offer resources at different levels. Like there's this 1-hour workshop that I offer for free. There's things that I offer for free, but then there's big ticket items that I have to charge my worth. Like I have to exercise and embody what I preach. If I'm not exercising when I'm preaching, then, you know, I'm a fraud. I need to be an example to my community that we are worth the investment and that what we are producing is unique to us and extremely valuable. And also that your return on investment in me is going to pay off. I also have to think of that, like how much revenue is this going to bring in for someone else? Way more revenue, because all of my work is rooted on money mindset first before investing, which is why I think that the way I teach the stock market and understanding that entire system is so important, because we move through blocks, the mental blocks that make us feel like we have to work 20 jobs and get paid nothing. And so I think it's just finding resources that you can have, most especially when at times, because I know this has happened to me, where I'll get attacked, like, who can even afford this? Or, you know, where it's like, here's this, all these resources, these podcasts I've been on, those are resources too. Your TikTok is a free resource. Your Instagram is a free resource of knowledge that you're giving. You have all of this content to ingest. If I continue to move you in a way, then this is what you have to pay for, you know, et cetera. So that's kind of my perspective on that.
Yeah, I agree. For me, very similar. I mean, I still deal with this like every day with like my commitment to accessibility and pricing. But also one thing that one of my teachers always reminds me is, if you want to really support the people that you care about, you need to be resourced. And so if you're not charging to be fully resourced, then like, you're not going to show up. And this actually happened in my business to where I was like, oh, I'm just going to be very affordable. And then the business just wasn't sustainable. And so I had to go with that belief of like, I have to work hard and have like all these other jobs or whatever. I had to find other ways to resource me so I could show up basically for free for the business that was supposed to sustain me. And so 100%, I always have to remind myself, does this feel fair both ways? Into whatever I'm giving and what I'm receiving, do I feel resourced with the exchange? Because otherwise, I'm going to be drained and annoyed and resentful. Like, this actually happened when I was business coaching and not charging enough. One of my clients, I supported her to go from $0 to $650,000 a year in 1 year. And she was paying me like $100 an hour per call. And so that's when I was like, wait a minute. I was able to support you into making all of this money and I'm not resourced. It's not fair. And so it's like, I had to remind myself, if I'm fighting against depression, how could I stop oppressing myself with not charging?
Speaking of finding our values and sort of like, ay, somos Latinos, sí, dáselo gratis, or like things like that, right? There's a really good book called The Value of Nothing by Raj Patel. And it's very interesting because the very first chapter talks about how like naturally we are wired to feel happier when we give than when we receive. That right away turns capitalism upside down, which is about, you know, acquiring, buying, and making gains for us. But when you start thinking about it, then you realize that there's something wrong with the system, right? So I feel like, not to generalize, but I feel like Latinos, we're a little bit more wired in that sense, that we like to please, we like to give, you know? So finding the balance in which we can find our worth in a system that, as much as we want to, we cannot change overnight, but at the same time, continue with our ethics and our values of wanting to give to the world. It's something that it's for a lot of Latinos and for a lot of people, it's a sometimes a lifelong journey. This book to me was super, super helpful because, you know, like being encerrado in a classroom, reading against capitalism and this and that is bien fácil. But then like, how do I go back to my dad who's broken his back working in construction, you know, and like Vegas summer weather, you know, I cannot tell him, oh, estás todo mal. So I think finding balances in your role in the system, but at the same time, your role as a human being that likes to give and offer to the world, it's something that is really, really important. And some people find that balance soon and some people, it takes forever. But I think it's as long as you appreciate your journey and again, understanding your process, I think that's like already a winning situation.
And just to add to that, I think it's important for us to process that if we don't have money, we can't give big impacts, right? Like there's been times where I get to give big ticket items. And yes, Babelito, it feels so good. It's like, this is why I want to make money. I want to be able to contribute and give like hundreds of millions. I want to be able to give millions, you know? And if we don't have millionaires in our community being able to distribute millions, then we're still waiting for the white man to be the distributor of the millions. And I'm just not having that anymore. I'm done with that.
Yeah. Speaking of white people, it was really hard for me to start having these like transparent conversations about how much I was getting paid for certain things in the art world. Everything is kind of like gatekept and mystified, right? Like, who knows how much these artists get paid? And thankfully I met a couple people in the beginning of my art career that kind of that pushed me to just have these open conversations. And then, you know, with talking with Babelito over the years on Latino Su Lunch and just all of us creatives who are just trying to figure it out in different mediums, new mediums, I find that it's institutionalized for it to be rude or ill-mannered to talk about money. But white people, let me tell you, because as a person that is in white spaces all the time, because I'm a TV Italian, okay, I hear white people talking about money openly all the time. Like, it's a myth, you know, like white people are always talking about money. So if you are an academic, I know a lot of people listening to this podcast are academics, are movers, shakers, their own content creators, right? Use those white people that you have those boring ass lunches with to start talking about money, okay? I'll tell you a real example that happened last week for me, okay? My friend came and he is the whitest, top tier white. He is from London. He's British, okay? The motherland. He's over here doing the same, almost the same thing that I'm doing. Okay, for a company that does have a lot of more money, but in San Francisco, he's like running a residency program and we're talking about different things and I wanted to do this project. And he's like, oh, I'm doing a very similar project. Okay, well, let's talk about budget. What are you going to do? And in my mind, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go big. I'm going to ask for $20,000 to make this project happen. And then he looked at me and he's like, what? And he opened up his computer and his budget was $200,000 for the same thing that I wanted to do. And he's just started explaining it. He's like, these companies have dumb money. If you don't ask for a budget that basically, like, as an artist, if you really want to focus on a project, that company should buy you out for as many months as that's going to take you, right? And I never thought about that. So he's like, so when you have a big project in the future, think about it as like, how much money would it take for you to cancel everything else to do this project? And then that's your budget, you know? And I was like, okay, well, let me just rip this $20,000. Let me put some zeros.
Right.
And of course, I talk to Latino artists all the time. Oh, for example, I almost want to say the name, but I don't want to get in trouble. I'll say it in code, but you art people will know who I'm talking about. There's a very important museum that shows artists like me. I'm going to be part of this big show at this museum coming up. And they want a very iconic piece of mine for this show. And I said, absolutely, it would be an honor to be in the show. I will do it. I get the paperwork for this show, the loan agreement, and I'm scanning it. And I'm like, damn, where's the honorarium? How much are they going to pay me for this piece? Like, I know I've already made it, but, you know, it's customary for them to at least offer you, you know, as an artist, like at least $1,000, you know, to have the piece in a show that's going to travel, in a show that's they're going to make money off of, okay? With over 50 artists, okay? And I'm scanning it. And then I email back. I'm like, I'm sorry, where's the honorarium? I don't see it mentioned in the contract. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're still working on that. You know, like all of this like language around it. And I just emailed back like, you need to pay artists. What is happening? And so now I'm on a mission. I'm going to find out who's in the show. And we all need to get an honorarium, right? If it brings my honorarium down to $100, fuck it. We all get $100, you know, like we all need to stand up for each other and be transparent about this. So it's all these people, our own people, you know, do it to us. Because that's how we're always treated, you know? And we have to break those fucking cycles.
I love that you mentioned that because I think it's also like, I feel like it's also my responsibility as someone who has a tiny level of influence to also bring people up. Porque me ha pasado, like, I've been doing a lot of corporate speaking stuff. And one time I was talking to this woman, a woman of color, and she was like, well, what's your fee? And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, okay, our budget is $1,500. So charge $2,000. And I'm like, okay, $2,000. And so then from there, the next time she brought me on, she was like, me mandó así como que. And the deal, like, our budget is $3,000. So charge $5,000. And so I think also us that have access to certain things, we need to also like open that up to other people because si no, así nos quedamos.
Yes, that's happened to me multiple times. And I think those are excellent resources that we need to tap into, where like friends that work at corporations will then think of me to be a speaker. And we're having a formal fucking conversation on email and on text, you know, cobra esto, cabrón. I'm like, okay. So like, because you get scared, you don't know, you're like 1,000, you know, and no, they got money to burn.
But should we also be calling these people out though? Because I think Fabi just said something about it's our own people doing it, right? And I got approached from this brand, and it was a Latina, and she was trying to lowball me. And I was like, wait, no, mames, no es tu dinero. It's not coming out of your fucking paycheck. Why are you trying to lowball me? So do we call these brands out and be like, a ver, culeros?
I have. I put them on blast on my Instagram.
I have to.
La Luz de Veracruz.
I put emails on blast on my Instagram to let people know if you're going to fucking email, you better come correct. And I highlighted that it was the Latina that was emailing me. And I responded like, you need to hold the line for me. You need to protect me. You're in there. You're on the inside. It is your job to make sure that I get paid the same as the white girl that they're reaching out to.
I will. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I did that too. And then I was banned.
And then you were blocked.
I was blocked by that company. They didn't invite me back. Pero es necesario, because this was an insurance company. And when I was like, okay, what's your fee? And she's like, oh, well, we have a line of speakers that are waiting to get, you know, put in here, and we pay with exposure. And I'm like, yeah, but exposure doesn't pay my bills. And so I also did a blast on social media, and I was like, look, this is not cool, because exposure is not going to pay my bills. And the knowledge and wisdom that I'm sharing with people is serving them in some way. And you're being like supported as a company. Why are you doing this? So yeah, companies need to come correct. Agreed 100%. Oigan, ya se nos acabó el tiempo. What's next for you?
I would love to continue to work on this DIY thing that just kind of sprawled from, like, I want to say by accident, but nothing is an accident. I think that this is where I was supposed to be. And I really am working to try to get a line of products for your home. There's the platos, tazas, things of that nature that speak to us, that, you know, there's a reason why they're printed the way they're printed and the design. Y todo ese rollo. And that has really inspired me. So I'm hopeful that by the end of this year, I'll probably have something in the works where people can purchase and they can feel proud of showcasing and doing a tablescape that is inspired by their Latinidad.
Yes, I love that. It's needed. It's needed.
Who else wants to share what's next for them? Linda.
I just want to get to the place where I don't have to answer my emails anymore. I've come to the decision that there needs to be somebody, and I'm unapologetic about it, that I don't answer emails, but I answer emails for her. This is her email answer. That's my goal for this year, is I don't want to fucking answer. I'm not good at that. I'm good at other things, and that's what I need to focus on.
I concur. I'm also not good at answering emails. I'm the worst. Fabi.
I'm showing all over the place. So just if you want to keep up with what I'm doing, I hired somebody to actually make my website. So I will have a website this year. But if you go to justinfavela.com, it'll route you to my Instagram, which I keep up to date. I have a show up in Corpus Christi right now that I'm very proud of at Texas A&M, which was a tribute to kind of religious iconography, Latinidad in South Texas, and of course, honoring Selena at the same time. It was a really fun show to put up. I have work also in San Diego at the Mingi International, which is a big craft museum in Balboa Park. I have a lowrider there, so check that out if you're in San Diego. And again, I have my book coming out. I have a link on my Instagram, so you can pre-order the book, as we mentioned. Pre-order Linda's book as well, please. Where is the lowrider, somebody asked. I have lowriders all over. So I have one in Las Vegas right now. I have one in San Diego at the Mingi, and I have one at Nuwu Art Center. It's a new art gallery in town. And there's one in a casino at the Virgin Casino. There's one of my lowriders here in Vegas too. And I'll be making another lowrider for the Denver Art Museum. That show opens, I think, on July 6th. I'll be in New Mexico a lot this year, in Albuquerque. I'll be all over the place.
When are you coming back to Dallas?
Oh my gosh. When am I going back to Dallas? Not soon enough. I don't think I have anything scheduled, but I'll have to just make a trip to go visit. I'll let you know when I'm there. We'll go eat at P.F. Chang's at the mall again.
Yes. I know.
Yeah, it was right before the world shut down, right? When you had just moved there. Yeah, because
whatever happened to that show?
Well, it stayed up and then like an extra year. I did this whole installation in that mall, and then it was connected to a museum in Fort Worth, and then everything shut down in just a few months, which is sad. But they paid me, so whatever. Thanks for the exposure, right?
See, de hecho, one of my friends messaged me, and she was like, do you want to go to this piñata thing? And I was like, wait. And so I text Fabi, and I was like, are you in the show? And he was like, yeah, I'm on my way. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Y se olvidó that I was in San Diego. And then we didn't get to meet because you had to come and install and it was like super late and whatever. But next time you come to San Diego, we'll hang out.
Yeah.
Babelito, what's next for you?
The same. I'm on a tenure track. So I am with the pressure of publishing. I have 2 chapters and 2 different books coming out next year, working on my own book, hoping to get a fellowship so I can just knock this out. It's a lot of research. I'm working on the exhibition, which is traveling. So every place that it travels is going to be a little bit different. So we're commissioning artists from Chicago to add to the exhibition here. We're commissioning artists from Vegas to add to the show in Vegas. And hopefully the same with San Antonio. So just a lot of traveling. Unfortunately, I hate to travel so much with all my passion. If I could just be home watching anime, my life will be easy. But I can't. So there's a lot of that happening. And I am excited. I have my first 2 PhD students that started last semester. And I'm just pushing them. I'm giving them the opportunities that they were never given to me. One of my students helped me curate the show in New Mexico. I used my research money so they could come. They're part of the catalog. We're working on hopefully putting a panel together so we can get another book deal and just do, because I wanted to do a whole book on a methodology, but I realized that those methodologies are coming together because of the classes that I teach. So I want to, my hope is to put together a book with essays with all my students that are advancing the methodologies that I introduced to them. So just doing a little bit of that. Also during the pandemic, we started a YouTube channel that's going a little bit slow, but we created a lot of content. It's called Unsettling Journeys. Basically, it's just me telling my husband what to upload and what to do. And we are adding content in relation to our own projects. He does a lot of screenings in Chicago. We're doing stuff. He's doing stuff at the Cheech that just opened in Riverside. So you'll see a little bit of that through the YouTube channel. But ultimately, I just want to keep giving opportunities to my students the ways that some of my mentors did not do for me. And we'll see. We'll see what the future holds. And for now, I'm in Chicago. So if you're ever in Chicago, hit me up.
In Chicago, huh?
Chicagastlan, as I call it. I miss podcasting. I'm always asking people, have me in your show.
Wait, does this mean that is there ever a possibility for Latinos Who Lunch to come back in the future? Am I feeling like a reboot energy?
To find us a producer where we could just go and record and leave, I will be so down. But
yes,
if anybody's listening and is ready to just do it all and for us to just show up, that's what we want. So, and I'm looking at Nancy. No, I'm
you all need to shop the show. You need to shop the show, putting it out into the universe. You need a podcast agent, which is something that I've just recently got, that's going to fight for you and shop the show. It comes with producers. It comes with everything. They give you your notes. The only thing you do is sit down and motherfucking record. Someone else takes it. You walk away and life is life.
That will be the dream. Fabi, you know how much I miss like being annoyed at everything and then just code talking about all the shit that I did in a faculty meeting or an exhibition. Yeah. And just like let it out. It was, now I have to just live with it.
I miss blacking out whenever you talk about that and just, you know, thinking about what I'm going to eat later. I really miss it.
So Fabi and Babelito need to go individually on Pam's podcast. Don't be like another podcaster who I'm not going to name, but it sounds like Mamarindo.
We didn't have a paywall exclusive podcasterio sesh. That would be fun. I know we're out of time, but I find it very interesting. Well, so I'm in Arkansas right now, and white people, they're going off over there. And they're trying to change the laws there. And the Sarah Huckabee Sanders just banned the word Latinx from being used in any government document or any state like official document. And I remember, Luis, speaking of the first time we had a crossover episode in 2016, we were talking about the word Latinx and how we thought it was like, we were making fun of it. We're like, Latinx, like Windex or whatever.
Yeah, because there was like Latinao and we all started singing El Venao. I remember so.
And so now I think it's, you know, we never think it's going to be this fast, but I think like, I feel like culture is just, you know, it's kind of cycling in hyperspeed because of the internet and because, you know, the new generations. And so now we're back to this conversation. And now I feel like a lot of the academics that I know are saying, well, Latine, that's just an easier way to say it and a better way. You know, now that they're banning Latinx, they're like reexamining. And so then these conversations that I thought were ignorant when we were having them years ago, I was like, our initial gut reaction as actual Latina people was like, yeah, Latinx doesn't really fit. I mean, of course, Latinx is an important identifier and it shouldn't be dismissed and we shouldn't police that. You know, we like Babelito said, we contain multitudes. We can be Latinx, Latine, Latinao, whatever, you know. But it's interesting that these new conversations that we were having in 2016 are on the table and still being hashed out today. So yeah, you never know. We might have to bring back LWL to do a part two, you know, of that conversation.
You know, like so many times my students will tell me things like that. I'll be like, we talk about it in the podcast in 2016.
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, we talk about it in the podcast like 4 years ago. Like there's so many things that, as you say, they keep recycling. And that's just one out of many examples of things that we were, you know, like bringing forth. But, you know, that's what happens. We'll get our credit one day.
Right.
Never give up, everybody. Your existence will always be challenged in this country.
As a friend of mine says once, si fuera por el imperio, todos estaríamos muertos.
That's right. Pues bueno, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. This was fun. We have so much more to talk about.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for making this happen, Pam. Thank you so much. Love you, everyone.
I love you guys. So good to hear from you and know that everyone's doing amazing.
Yes. All right, everyone. Muchas gracias. Thank you for coming for a special 300 episode of Café con Pam. More to come. Y bueno, como siempre, stay shining. Bueno, listeners, what do you think? Look, in an alternate reality, this would have been an IRL reunion. And I say in an alternate universe because I believe it can still happen. I'm really curious to know what you think. Share your thoughts, all the things. I realized as I shared my update about what happened to me, I wasn't frankly prepared to talk about me because I just wanted to learn about my friends and catch up with them and ask them all the things. Because while we're cool with each other, we don't talk to each other all the time. And so this was really a time to find out what's been going on in their lives. And it threw me off when they asked me about me when it was time for me to introduce myself or like, I don't know, share my update. But I feel like if you listen to Café con Pam, you know what's happened. Lots of things have happened. I've grown just like all of us. We've grown and I'm definitely a different person since 2016. I have definitely grown in so many ways and I'm grateful you've been here to witness all of it. So if you have thoughts, comments, questions, screenshot, tag us. I'm sure you follow everyone who is here. And if you don't, all their links are in the show notes. And if this is your first time here, welcome to Café con Pam. I hope you feel at home. I hope you choose to stay. If you're choosing to stay, I want to remind you, you can subscribe. And if you're excited about this, then you can rate and you can review. And
I would love to hear what you think about the show. I appreciate your thoughts and your comments. Thank you for being here. And I would love to stay connected. Of course, the easiest way is social media at Cafe Con Pan Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, at Cafe Con Pan Pod on TikTok. Check out my work, cafeconpan.com. I am also a business coach. I became the coach my mom needed. Maybe one day I will share how I stumbled upon this career, because I did. And I didn't share it in this episode because, again, I wanted to hear from them. Pero I would love to stay in touch. Join us on Discord. We have an online gathering space there because I got into Web3. That's the other thing that I forgot to mention. I am a Web3 artist. I created a NFT collection. And now in this bear market, because not only is it a bear market in the stock market, as Linda would share, it's also a bear market in the crypto space. It's a bear market everywhere, I think, even in the real estate space. But yeah, I want to hear from you. It's super fun to receive your comments, your thoughts, your questions. And recently, I shared a story on social asking you if you would like to have a ask bum, whatever you want to ask. And so I am making it happen. Perhaps what we'll do is create an anonymous form so you don't even have to email. You just go to a link that I will have maybe in this episode, in the notes in this episode, so you can start dropping your questions. And once we gather enough questions to put together an episode, we'll do it. Maybe we'll do it by episode 305. I don't know. It's wild. We've been in the three digits, but 300 episodes? Who would have thought that this little idea I had about sharing other people's stories was going to get to this point, to where now the podcast pays for itself virtually, which is really amazing. And we wouldn't be here. I do want to make it very clear that Cafe Con Pam would not be here if it wasn't for you listening. So I want to thank you. Well, I'm very grateful for Fabi, for Babelito, for Linda, and for Luis to come and share in the show and be these special guests. I really believe the special guest is you, listener. You on the other side of this speaker, AirPod, earphone, whatever it is that you're listening to me in. I don't know, prepositions. I think you are the biggest one I have to thank. Because if you choose to not listen to me, then Cafe Con Pam doesn't exist. And so I want to express my eternal gratitude for your ears, for lending me your ears week after week, or whenever you choose to binge me, perhaps. And I'm so honored. Now, this is part of my job. This is my job, to share stories, to ask questions, to make sure that we create history together. And I don't take it for granted. So I want to make sure that you know that I'm so grateful for you. Thank you so, so much for being here. And to 300 more, to 1,000 more episodes, I can't wait to continue to create. Thank you so, so much for allowing me to continue to do this work. Because what started as a selfish endeavor and this hunger I had to meet incredible people now has become this ecosystem of stories that we are leaving behind. And I think about what's going to happen in the year 2060 or even the year 3000, I don't know, when those new beings go through the archives of audio and they find Cafe Con Pam and they'll hear this. Thank you again for being here. My health is better. I feel okay. I am in the process of doing follow-ups and exploring more about the test results, perhaps doing more. Pero dentro de lo que cabe, yo me siento bien. And in case you're wondering, and continue to pass on that information. If you saw on Instagram, I shared a post about what could be one of the reasons what happened to me, which is I got a massage. And so I invite you to read it and then spread the word, because it could truly, I believe, it could save someone's life. Bueno, listeners. El que mucho se despide, pocas ganas tiene de irse, pero ya es time. Gracias por estar aquí. Y como siempre, stay shining.